Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segreto, and this is Franchise Today. Boy, we're in South Texas with some extreme heat, and there was extreme heat coming out of the International Franchise Expo. It was a very robust event this past weekend, and I'd like to invite on my co-host, Stan Friedman, who's going to give us a little bit of insight into the happenings at the IFE.
You know, Paul, it went so fast. I mean, this probably, felt like just lightning, man, from the front to the back. And I went into New York early, too, so I had a day and a half more time than most people. And I can't tell you how quickly the buzz around this expo this year was amongst some of the best I remember. And it was a pretty good-sized show. I think we had north of 400 exhibiting franchisors, tons of new concepts. I mean, I saw walking the floor of that show. I laugh every year because Brian Snell and I, every year we walk the floor of the show and we walk an aisle together and we look left and we look right and we say, look at all these new brands here. And one year, I think it was just a year ago, that Brian said, there are probably more illegal financial performance representations being made in this room right now than any place on the planet.
And, yeah,
you know,
said
with a grin, just because of the lack of experience of so many of those emerging brands. But there was a real buzz on the floor of that show. The traffic, you know, up, down, and in between, as it always is, you see different traffic flows on each of the 3 days. But everybody's attitude, everybody's mood and spirit was just, I thought, as good as it's been in for a long, long time, given all of the problems that franchising still is fighting off every day from the attack from government regulation. I mean, you'd not have known it from the feeling in that room.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You talk about the attacks franchising experience. I saw something today, the SEUI, the great union organizers behind some of this stuff, came out with a big warning to 75 different global companies about McDonald's master franchising strategy in Asia and the Far East. Oh, my God, I can't believe what they're trying to do. I mean, you know, outside the U.S.
Well, they know no bounds, Paul. And I think part of the front of the house today, again, keeping with the theme of the good and positive stories that are out there, for every one of these attacks and desperate moves to do what they can to dismantle our business model that we all live and breathe, this year I really think IFA has found the sweet spot between Aziz and Robert Crisante taking the helms at the same time as chairman and CEO, respectively. The focus of putting a positive impact of franchising message out there is starting to take hold. And IFA has actually launched the At Our Franchise campaign, highlighting the positive attributes of franchising. And what they're doing is encouraging all of us in the franchise world to tell our stories of local franchise owners, employees, and their communities, and they're going to force this campaign out to showcase three primary messages. One, franchising is a proven job creator. Franchising is the largest vocational trainer for millions of employees. And franchising creates a uniquely accessible pathway for opportunity and growth through franchise ownership. And when you've got Aziz at the helm, who started out, you know, working behind the counter, and now is, you know, the chairman of the IFA and a multi-unit franchisee and a franchisor and a private equity investor. Number three, again, franchising creates a uniquely accessible pathway to opportunity. You've got the chairman of the IFA as a walking billboard this year. And so the campaign is going to showcase these stories from local franchise locations, such brands as Fast Signs and Jersey Mike's, Two Men in a Truck, Mosquito Joe's, already jumping in. And anyone who wants to participate in this initiative is encouraged to do so. You can log in and sign up for updates at the website, which is ourfranchise.com, at ourfranchise.com, or on Instagram at ourfranchise. So everybody should get in on this and just virally help us build a compelling knowledge base of information to share and for people to help others who really just don't get it, that franchising is about national or international brands, but being operated and owned locally by your friends and neighbors, not by giant corporations with corporate headquarters around the world. And we've got to do that
Absolutely.
As a foundational. We get this paradigm shift a little bit, and then SEIU can go run and do whatever they want in Malaysia or here or anywhere. We'll hit them back with a message that we control instead of the one that they've been controlling.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Stan, and I know Aviv has been extremely busy, I think, to say the least. But ahead of the Franchise Action Network conference in September in Washington, D.C., we really need to try to get Aviv onto the show. We've had past chair people on the show. It's been great. I know Aziz has verbally committed to being on the show. We just need to iron that down and go into that conference on a big high, and I think it'll ride everything that you just said. And I know you've got a little bit of insight into his activity, so I'm going to leave that on your shoulders.
Well, nothing like a little pressure to get things done. I'll take ownership of that, and Paul, you know what? I'll but guarantee it. I don't think that should be. It might be challenging, but we'll get it done. And I know that Aziz will be very happy to, as we find ourselves inching up closer to that event, he'll feel compelled to be certain to get the message out to as many people as he can to participate in the program and to be not just hearing about it after the fact, but actually making plans to come to Washington
Sure.
For the event itself. So I'll own that one, Paul. I'll take it on.
Okay.
Hey, I wanted to let you know, too, that yesterday I got to participate in a program right here in Atlanta that was sponsored by Coca-Cola. It was hosted by the Atlanta Business League, the IFA, and the IFA's Educational Foundation. And it was put on by the Atlanta Business League at the Cleveland Dinard Conference Center at the Atlanta Technical College. Now, I am embarrassed to tell you that before yesterday, I didn't know that the Atlanta Technical College existed. And after yesterday, I'm going to do anything I can to further become involved with and promote any events that are being held or fostered by this group. They had about 80 or 85 paid attendees. The audience was largely African American. It was a program that the Educational Foundation's Diversity Institute and Coca-Cola as a major supporter helped to promote. And everyone there was a paid attendee. They were there to learn more about how they can own their businesses and own their lives. And many in the room already are engaged in business and some even in franchising, but there to learn more about opportunities that the world of franchising brings. My panel, I mean, I had a guy on my panel who has 14 or 15 airport locations in Atlanta Hartsfield. He's got the Atlanta Breads, he's got Baja Fresh, Phillips Seafood. He owns and operates three Popeyes in the airport. So this is amazing. All the Coke machines, every Coke machine that you get a Coke out of in the airport's operated by his company. And you know, this guy was able to sit there, and his name is Mac Wilburn, and give the audience a look at what they are all there to become. Everybody in that room wanted to be him because, you know, he's in the twilight of his career, and he's there to show them what hard work and energy and tenacity can end up looking like. And then also on the panel, Alicia Ivey, who is the president of Goldberg's Concessions, and they just have two or three concessions in the airport, and they're just starting. And so the synergy between each of them and their conversations was phenomenal for that audience. Tarji Carter from Dunkin' Brands, and there's a gentleman from the Midwest region for Chick-fil-A, rounded out the panel. So I had a couple of franchisors and a couple of franchisee operators, and collectively I moderated a session that helped the audience understand how they can go from where they are to maybe being like Alicia, and Alicia all the way over to Mac, and connecting all those dots from startup to beginning years and then to twilight years with 14 or 16 brands. And then, of course, the franchisor is able to provide the audience with some insight as to what it is franchisors are looking for in them as candidates as they learned how to do their due diligence and interview franchisors. Great program. I really want to thank Miriam Brewer and the IFA's Educational Foundation and Coca-Cola for Roy Jackson, Senior VP at Coke, for sponsoring this event and for inviting me to participate, give greetings on behalf of the Diversity Institute, and then to participate moderating that panel. I had the greatest of times and was so proud to be a part of the program.
Well, there was really great stuff. It sounds like a lot of energy. It certainly sounds like, well, I know because I was at the IFA also, there was a lot of energy coming out of the IFA, at the IFA and coming out of the IFA. We had a lot of energy on the show last week. I want to give a special shout out to last week's guest, Eric Casaburi, the CEO and founder of Retro Fitness. Sorry we missed you in New York. I thought you'd be in the booth, but you weren't, but we got a chance to meet the previous week's guest, Carmelo Marsala, who was there, who, of course, we know is the winner of last year's Next Gen program. I mean, just great energy. And, you know, when we talk about energy, we're always talking about, we talk a lot about emerging brands. And, you know, it's interesting, I read, you know, providing a much-needed solution to dental practices with a fast turnaround, reliable customer service, and very competitive rates. Dental Fix has over 130 vans operating in the United States and Canada. And get this, Stan, serving more than 17,000 dentists with a very unique business model. And with that, I'd like to introduce our special guest today, David Lopez, CEO and co-founder of Dental Fix. David, welcome to Franchise Today.
Well, thank you very much for having me, guys.
You know, it's interesting. Just when we think we've heard of every franchise that's out there, we go to an event like IFE and we see a host of new emerging events. And through it all, now we're coming up and talking with you, David. And here's another brand that obviously is not new, not emerging, very well established, but yet kind of under the radar, you know, mainstream, because it's such a unique concept, and certainly we'd love to learn more about it. But why don't you take us and tell us a little bit about you, you the individual, you the entrepreneur, and how you started down this track.
Yeah, so I went to college at University of Central Florida in Orlando. I was 19 years old. I had a very good internship for a very large Fortune 500 company. And my first week or two in the internship, I witnessed them let go, you know, approximately 1,000 people out of their corporate headquarters. And that was kind of my aha moment of, you know, wow, I'm going to go into business for myself, right? At that point, it was strictly an emotional decision to go into business for myself, having witnessed, you know, so many people being let off. And the only thing I really knew how to do was make smoothies because I had worked at a juice bar, and I was able to secure a location inside of a community college in Orlando, and I financed it with credit cards and student loans and dropped out of school and opened my first juice bar. And that's kind of the start of it all was, you know, getting into it and then trying to figure it out. And franchising kind of fell on my lap because I had a family friend approach me and ask me if I ever thought about franchising my company, and I didn't. I kind of joke, I was more focused on just trying to make payroll the end of that week, is what I said to him. So, you know, and then I went through the kind of what I will say is probably the norm of most people that want to become franchisors, the, you know, plethora of consultants and you know, companies that are going to charge you X and do your franchise agreement and help you with your operations manual and those types of things. So I went through kind of that normal educational process that you go through with learning the franchising business. And you know, and since then, I've just always been in a business owner, and I've stayed in, you know, whether I am a franchisee of my own concepts, whether I'm a franchisor, or whether it is a kind of a spin-off of a franchise. I usually stick pretty close to a franchise type of a model, and I've diversified that over, several different companies, DentalFix, being one of them.
How many fruits did you have operating as franchise units before you started to branch out and look at concepts to the left or right?
I want to say about 50 or 60 units.
Wow. And then the bridge between smoothies and fruits and a Dental Fix or a Dr. G's or some of these other brands that you found yourself developing and further developing. I mean, you became like, there's always the challenge to help operators understand the difference between operating and scaling their business. Well, you seem to have figured that out with relative ease to the point where now you've become the scale of scale and the multi, not just unit, but multi brands. And there seems to be, there has to be a story as to how you got from a Fruits to a Dental Fix or to a Dr. G's, because they just don't seem connected. But tell us a little bit about how that came together for you.
You know, the connection, when you look at a business, right, what you do, whether you're a restaurant, whether you repair dental equipment, or whether you provide, I am partners in one called Tiki's, which is a mobile shaved ice franchise concept that has like 35 units. What you do, the actual product or service, is important, but I'm not the person that is in charge of what we do, right? The product or service that we provide to the customer, is typically managed by somebody else, typically my partner in that business, right? The operator. What I know how to do is strategic plan. What I know how to do is, we are here, we want to get there. What steps are we going to take to get from here to there? And then, I've built a pretty big, pretty decent sized management team, right? I share a lot of my resources. For example, I have a call center, and the person that oversees my call center oversees the call center for 5 or 6 different companies that I own. So, I do a lot of, my franchise sales is, managed by the same group of people that, that do the sales for all of the companies, right? So for me to put a process in place, whether it is a restaurant concept or a medical weight loss business, it's the same group of people putting in the same processes and doing the same thing, but the day-to-day operational support, is usually just drilled down to the operator. And really how they all came about was just opportunistic. I met people that had great businesses that were cash flow positive, that were making money and were looking to scale. And, they could have gone the route of hire a consultant or somebody like I did, or they could have gone the route of bringing in a partner, and I'm the guy that was their partner. So I would come in, partner, provide capital, and provide management.
So what I hear you saying is kind of similar to something we were going to hear. You heard Paul talk about having Aziz on when he does come on. I think we're going to hear a little bit of the same thing in his early days in the restaurant business. He didn't really get married necessarily to the flag or the operation. He looked at formulas for when is the best time to enter or leave or get in or out of a concept. And I think what you're saying is pretty much the same. You've got a formula for scalability, and you're not the concept guy. You're the guy who knows how to take the back office and bring the economies of scale together to the benefit of whatever the brands might be. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. And a big part of it is strategy. So it's not only scale. I think scale is important. I think the resources are important, right? But it's the strategy. It's how am I going to get from point A to point B? And it makes all the difference in the world. I mean, if you look at the business model for DentalFix, right, I don't look at it and say, okay, I'm a franchise company. Here's the typical franchise model. Here's my franchise fee. Here's my royalty. And boom, here's my business model. And we're basically licensing out our business model. That's not how I look at it. To me, I first want to understand, if this is going to be a franchise, because I own companies. I buy dental offices, for example. That's not a franchise, right? Mm-hmm. I have a very unique model of going across the country and buying dental practices. And, it started off looking at it and maybe from the lens of a franchisor, but when you think about how am I going to get from point A to point B, don't let the box of franchising kind of confine you. So the best franchises in the country, in my opinion, are franchises that being a franchisee is a competitive advantage to the business model. So in DentalFix, for example, you know, if you look at growing this corporately, there's a lot of very big players out there in the dental industry, big publicly traded companies that have dental equipment repair departments, right? So the largest is a publicly traded company. They have about 700 guys on the road that repair dental equipment, right? But when you look at their model and how they do it, it's broken. They're not making money at it. They use it as a loss leader. Being a dentist, right, owning dental practices, I understand kind of how their model worked and how it went about it, and it was wrong. The secret sauce to DentalFix is the fact that the owner of the van is the owner, the owner of the business is the guy that's in the van, and that the owner of a dental office is typically the dentist that's in that dental office. So that owner-to-owner, small-business-to-small-business is a huge kind of advantage. And then when you look at the business, I say, okay, what do these people need in a van to be successful, right? They don't need me to take a royalty from them. What they need is for me to help get them customers. So how am I going to do that? What they need is help, aggregating parts, right? How am I going to do that? What they need is help getting more lines of equipment. How am I going to help them do that? And then I build the business model around that. And if I could say, you know, for example, when you are repairing dental equipment and a customer calls you because their compressor is broken and you can't answer the phone because you're fixing equipment, how could I be the solution for that? And if I could figure out a way to be the solution for that and I can do it at a price point that makes sense for you and makes sense for me, now we've created a win-win relationship. And, so it's a very unorthodox setup, DentalFix. We do not charge a royalty. We charge what's called a corporate support fee. And if you look at the corporate support fee, we have a call center of, 45 people that are, have three primary functions. Number one, get the franchise owners new customers, right? So we're calling into the market that you are and we're getting you customers. Number two, once you have turned a dentist into your customer, we are staying in contact with that customer and making sure that you're visiting them frequently. Right, we call that our kind of account management department. And then our third is when you go into an office and you give an estimate and you leave and you forget about it, we follow up on those estimates for you. And those three solutions, right, are all the difference in the world for you if you're a guy in a van trying to repair dental equipment. Now, I can do that for you for $2,000 a month. You can try to do it on your own, but just to hire somebody to do those services is going to cost you more than $2,000 a month. So it's a win-win. I can scale those services at $2,000 a month that works for me. And for you, you can afford to pay me $2,000 a month because if you try to do it yourself, it will cost you more. So that's a real, win-win value add. I can make money on it. You're saving money on it. Long term, it's going to work, right? So that's an example of one thing on how I looked at it kind of outside of the box and kind of put it together so that, it would work.
It's very interesting. I've done a lot of work with home-based businesses and mobile businesses outside, bricks and mortar. And typically, those type of franchisees deliver good service. Never seems to be a problem, but it's they don't know what to do, as I say, when there appears to be nothing to do, whether it be the marketing, manning, the phones, whatever the case might be. And it seems to me that you've created that formula to let them do what they do best and not have to worry about a lot of that back-end support, so to speak. Because at the end of the day, when they finish their route or wherever they are in providing service, the last thing they want to do is start picking up the phone and, soliciting new business and following up on different things. I mean, they might have already put in a 12, 14, 15-hour day. It's nice to come back and have a lot of those support services in place. So, definitely my hat's off to you on that because all the brands that, are in that mobile space that are not succeeding, a big part of it is because the franchisee's trying to do too much and not spending their core time on what they should be doing best, which, of course, is delivering the customer experience.
Yeah, I agree.
Obviously. You're doing it and doing it extremely well. That's great. And especially, I guess what I'm intrigued about because I could see the natural progression, you know, from, you know, food trucks and, you know, tikis and dealing with ice cream and shaved ice and doing that. But, you know, I still go back to what, you know, Stan was talking about. You know, dental equipment repair is so far off to the side, and obviously the model is working, but what intrigued you, what attracted you to look at, you know, dental repairs from a mobile standpoint? Because, so, you know, there's got to be players out there. I mean, it's something that's totally off the radar in normal circumstances.
Yeah, so first, you know, I start with, you know, I need to make good financial sense. So how Dental Fix came about is a good friend of mine was repairing handpieces for a big company. And he wanted to go out on his own and fix the handpieces. And he said, listen, I could go in a van, and I could fix handpieces in a van, and I could go to the dental offices. I could fix these handpieces in a van. I could charge $179. My cost is $40. It takes me 5 minutes to do the repair. Look at how many handpieces I do in a day. And he needed an investor, right? So how it started is I was the investor, right? So I put in some money and let him kind of go and see how it turned out. And what I saw is in the first year, he really didn't make any money. If I remember correctly, I want to say his revenue was like $39,000, $40,000 in his first year. And when I spoke to him about how it was going, you know, his main struggle was getting customers. Now, I owned another company, and I had a call center with, 100 outbound salespeople on the phone making phone calls. So I said, you know what? You need help getting customers. Let's see if I can help you get customers. So I took someone from the call center, put them on calling, and boom, in the next, 6 months, his revenue quadrupled because we had somebody scheduling appointments for him to go into, right? Then the business evolved a little further from just fixing handpieces to repairing everything. And then what I realized is, wow, I had a van doing substantial revenue here, you know, substantial. And he was making a fantastic income. And, you know, I said, you know what, let me see if I could duplicate this. So I took my brother-in-law and put him in a van. And now, unfortunately, he passed away in a motorcycle accident. But, you know, when we put him in the van and I saw him grow his business, and I saw in a 12-month period where he got to, I knew that we had, you know, a solid foundation, you know, here for a franchise, because I had two vans operating profitably, making a very good income. The quality of life was great. They were working Monday through Friday from 8 to 5, no weekends, you know. It's a B2B, you know, you're dealing with medical offices. It was a great environment to work on. And when I looked at the competitors that existed in the space, it was, the competitors sell stuff to dentists. They don't want to fix things. They have to fix in order to sell. So when I knew that they didn't even want to be in the business, I saw it as an opportunity. I said, how in the world can I go into my next door neighbor, where my office was with the call center? My next door neighbor was one of these huge billion-dollar companies that were our competitor, literally the door next to me. And I said, how in the world could I be, you know, how am I going to go compete with Microsoft and win? Unless there's, you know, something here that Microsoft really didn't care about. And I saw that opportunity. And then I saw, you know, a few kind of key things that the business needed from a technology standpoint. If we could have built a technology platform to manage everything, to integrate everything, I thought that, you know, long term, that we would be able to build a very, successful company. And then, you know, started franchising, and, you know, it took a while to get, you know, just like you guys, most people, you don't wake up and say, I want to fix dental equipment for a living. Just nobody does that. Nobody says that. Nobody thinks about that. There's no school to go to. And by the way, that was a huge challenge. There's no school to go to learn how to fix dental equipment. So how do you teach somebody how to fix dental equipment? That was a very big obstacle that we had to overcome. But today we have a 9-week training program that, you know, people come in, and when they leave, they know how to fix dental equipment. And, you know, we built out a training facility, a 2,500 square foot training facility that is, you know, basically a full working dental practice that we're able to take people into and teach them how to repair it. So there was a lot of obstacles that we had to overcome, but we overcame them. And, and we were able to recruit a lot of very good franchise owners that came into the business. And you know how it works. Once you get a group of guys that are making a lot of money, then it becomes a lot easier.
Sure, of course it does. And as a true entrepreneur, you saw a situation, you saw the possibilities, and you created the solutions and capitalized on it. And as you were talking about, this type of equipment, my mind was running in other types of like businesses that a similar model could be put into action. And I'm sure you're already thinking about some of that for sure.
Well, I'm not the startup guy. So somebody else has to have the idea, and I'll be happy to back it when it's making money.
Hey, you're listening to Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman, along with co-host Paul Segreto. And today we're talking with serial entrepreneur, multi-brand franchisor David Lopez. Franchise Today is brought to you by the Franchise Foundry, a business accelerator boasting more than 30 years of experience helping emerging brands bring sustainable growth to their franchise concepts. The Franchise Foundry utilizes a hybrid coaching and consulting approach that fosters effective short and long-term solutions for their clients in several aspects of their business. These include general and operational management, change management, traditional and digital marketing, relationship and business management, and let's, of course, remember franchise recruitment and development. The Franchise Foundry can also assist brands raising capital and the exploration of mergers and acquisitions. Learn more about their expanding list of clients across various industry segments at franchisefoundry.com. That's www.franchisefoundry.com. Franchise Today, also brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and document management software designed specifically for managing franchised relationships. Built in industry-leading Microsoft Dynamics CRM, FRM Solutions are both cloud-based as well as fully accessible from right inside your Outlook inbox. With FRM, you'll spend more time focused on growing your business while systems and solutions are taken care of with effective management workflows and collaborative communication across your prospective and existing franchisees. You can sort, report, and dashboard all of your vital data and empower your team to accelerate franchise sales, streamline the store opening process, and better manage day-to-day operations. No hassles, no long-term contracts, no excuses, just solutions. FRM Solutions, found on the web at frmsolutions.com. Speaking of found on the web, Paul, I should have included this during the front of the house, but I didn't want to rain on your introduction. But I found something in the Smart Brief this week where IFA aggregated a series of Father's Day messages that some of the finest and best of the best in the world of franchising shared, and IFA aggregated all those, including Robert Cresante, the IFA CEO. But the one that I found particularly interesting was from a guy named David Lopez. And here's what David wrote and appeared on Facebook. As a father, I'm constantly preaching to my kids that if they ever get into tricky situations, they should just do the right thing. I've taught them to define the right thing as something they'd be proud of, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that I have to live knowing what decision they made. I've taken the same practice with me to franchising. I've found that so often in franchising, people will solely focus on upholding a contract or sticking to the rules of the business, when really, sometimes doing what's right is doing the best thing. I think, David, if there's anything that you've shared with us in the first half of our time together today, that I could say is more important than anything else, I don't know what it would be. But what I read here in terms of culture and how you think and operate tells me an awful lot about the successes of your business, not just the strategies and the systems behind them. Talk a little bit about the culture of the environment in your brands and what franchisees and you do together to collaboratively make those better places to be culturally.
Well, culturally in Dental Fix, I would define our culture as we work hard. That's really the best way to describe it. It's a very blue-collar group of franchise owners and corporate staff. And we work very long hours, and everybody works very hard. And I think it's very transparent when we work with each other. But I think our franchise owners really look at us as, you know, partners in their business, because they communicate with us every single day, multiple times a day, because we're so integrated into their business, right? So that defines creates a different working relationship than when I was in the restaurant business and our franchisees, you know, simply paid a royalty at the end of the month based on their gross revenue. You really didn't have any services that you were providing to the franchisee. So I tend to like, and not that all of the companies I'm a partner in are structured this way, but I tend to like, you know, when you can establish a franchise where you become part of the business of the franchisees, because they feel more appreciative about, you know, paying you for those services, right? And that's why I say do the right thing. When you're in business, I mean, anybody that's an experienced business person knows, as much as we want to try to define everything in a contract, you know, the reality is you just can't. And if we can, you know, look at any situation and realize, you know, realize number one, what is our goal? Our goal is usually the same. We want you to be successful. We want you to make more money. We want you to do X, Y, Z. Okay, if we're working towards the same goal, let's keep that in mind here, right? And then, you know, I don't know why anyone talks about the contract or looks at the contract. If I am working with somebody and we have a goal, and the goal is to get from point A to point B, what are we going to do to help you to get point A to point B? And if I can do it, I'm going to do it. And if I can't do it, I'm going to tell you why I can't do it. But at the end of the day, I'm always going to do something that I think is the right thing to do. And everybody in our company, you know, everybody that works with me knows that. Everybody that works around me knows that. And, you know, when you don't define yourself always by, you know, because franchising is so contractual. And so many, I mean, for somebody getting into franchising, it's probably one of the biggest barriers to entry is all the regulation behind it and understanding all the laws. I've been in now for 15 years and, you know, it's impossible to understand the laws and how they change and all this stuff, you know, but at the end of the day, if you do the right thing, you don't get into legal trouble because you do the right thing. Right. And when both sides know that that's what's happening, you end up, you know, with a very, you know, usually a very positive outcome, even in a negative situation.
David, you even take that a step further by putting your money where your mouth is. Yours is one of the only franchises that offers a guarantee. If you would, share some of your insight on that.
Well, I do a lot of unorthodox things. So, yeah, I have a guarantee that, you know, it's pretty simple. If somebody's looking to buy a franchise, listen to what they're telling you. When you listen to them, right, most of the obstacles that people have when buying Dental Fix were based around the fact that I needed to get customers, right? Well, when I start, I have no customers. Yeah, if I can get customers, I'll do great. Yeah, so how do I eliminate the concern of getting customers? I put a guarantee. I say, listen, I guarantee that if you do these following three things, you work full time, and I define that as you're working Monday through Friday from 9 to 5 in your first year, you don't take more than a week off, right? You do a minimum number of marketing calls that we define, right? Which is very easy to hit, and you do those things, right? And you full time focus on this business. If you don't get that amount of customers, I'll refund your franchise fee. And it puts people at ease, and it helps them, you know, to feel more comfortable about the investment. But I'm also a big believer in, you know, my franchise, I have a lot of corporate staff that are also franchisees. So my COO owns 3 franchises. My head of training is a franchisee. And the guy that one of our director of operations is a franchisee as well. You know, and I know a lot of franchisors are against that. To me, I don't understand that. If you are the COO of my company and you can't run our business successfully, well, then what the hell are you running this company for? You know what I mean? Like when you speak to the franchise owners, I want you to be able to speak to them and say, this is what you need to do, X, Y, Z. Why? Because I'm doing it myself and I'm successful. So, you know, I don't typically live within the box. When I look at things, if it makes sense, you know, we do it. So that's hopefully I answered your question.
Well, and the interesting thing from what I read was you've yet to have to return a franchise fee because it hasn't been requested. So that's another kudos to you. But that is interesting, and you're right. I think your business model probably does make it a little bit easier to have corporate employees that are also franchisees, because obviously they can run their business without actually being on the van, where some of the bricks and mortar ones might not be the case. But certainly, I definitely hear what you're saying, and they certainly should know how to run the business. It's very interesting. So what are the potential, you know, growth mechanisms for a franchisee? Well, we're talking about that because you said that, you know, earlier you have the owner of the franchise business talking one-on-one to the owner of the dental practice. What happens if a franchisee wants to expand? How does he have those capabilities to do so?
So I do not do multi-unit franchise agreements. So that's the first. Let me rephrase that. I do not do them initially. So if you come to me and you want to buy three franchise agreements, I'm not interested. I will sell you one. Once you are profitable and you are up and running and you are doing well, then I will sell you additional franchises. So that's step one. Step one is open one and be profitable. To me, selling people multiple franchises is kind of like, you know, hey, we're going to get married. Let's have triplets instead of starting off with one kid. I'm not going to say you can't have triplets and you can't make it work, but, you know, ideally, let's start with one before we have another kid. And so that's the multi-unit. And once the franchise owner is successful, it becomes a very easy conversation to talk about expanding because they understand the business. They know what it's going to take to get successful, and there's clear expectations, you know, on both sides of it. So, you know, I would say at this point, I bet you probably 20-25% of our franchise system have multiple units now. You know, and for us, it's fantastic. There's nothing better than to see somebody continue to grow their business. And what's even interesting is we've got franchise owners that have started off being a franchisee of Dental Fix, opened a second one in Dental Fix, but we've got one franchise owner. He also has now a whole biomedical company. He's got an entire biomedical company where he's doing. He saw what he learned here, and he did it in a different business. You know, we've got one franchise owner that started doing Dental Fix, and now they have a whole medical billing business with dentists on the side. We've got one within the IT business, you know. So, you know, I'm very expanding can be a lot of different ways. And, you know, the business that I am in where I own dental practices, my partner in that business was a franchisee in Dental Fix. So he was a dentist that had multiple practices, came in through Dental Fix, and, you know, I ended up partnering with him, and we've grown from 9 offices to, like, 65 offices. And, you know, so to me, you know, how people grow and expand, I think, is very opportunistic. But as long as you keep an open mind and there's always a win-win, you know, there's a lot of opportunities. But, you know, multi-unit for me is a very important part of the business, but it shouldn't be used, in my opinion, as a way to extract more cash out of a franchise owner when they're starting their business and they haven't made a profit from day one.
David, is the rapid repair aspect of the Dental Fix business something that a franchisee also participates in some way, or is that merely a way to accommodate providing the same kind of services when there's not a truck rolling in that territory?
It's a complicated answer. Yes and no.
That was a pretty simple answer. Yes and no.
it depends, right? So what happens is you've got a lot of large group practices now in dental, and those large group practices typically negotiate national accounts, and so we negotiate national accounts with them and then provide the service with our franchise owner. But the problem with service and handpiece repair, even though we do it together in our vans, is generally looked at separately by the big companies. So when we're competing for business in a national account, we're competing against the big guys, and the way that they price it is we will do your handpiece repairs for X amount of dollars, each one, and they give a list, and then we will do your repair for X. So what happens is we have to present it in that manner, and some of our franchise owners don't do the type of repairs that they want done and don't know how to. It doesn't make sense for them to do it because when they do, it takes them more time. So we have a wholesale division that our franchise owners send us stuff to repair. So that's kind of how that plays in. And then, we'll go into markets where we do not have a franchisee. We'll be doing the repair for them, and when they open up, now they'll have a built-in customer base because we'll already be working with some of them. But it's more kind of, you know, answering the demand, you know, that's out there, right? And our vision for Dental Fix is a little bigger than just being a franchise company. I want to dominate the dental service industry in North America. So dominating the dental service industry in North America means I'm going to have to do more than just have guys on trucks repairing equipment. We need to go after different verticals and whatnot.
So moving forward and looking ahead, I did a little bit of research into something that took me from smoothies to dental repair to the ocean and whales. Can you tell us a little bit about your vision for the growth and the development of your corporate entity and how you're bringing franchisors into the fold and helping emerging companies build for sustainable growth, even outside of those brands that you are personally franchising yourself?
Yeah, so Franchise Whales is a concept. You know, it's interesting because you just talked about the, you know, I think you just said, I think it was the sponsor of this, this show, Franchise Foundry. It was kind of a similar almost concept, even though I'm not very familiar with it. But, you know, I get it at this point, you know, between all of my companies, you know, we're managing like 1,100 employees and north of $100 million in revenue. And I've got a very big management team now. And so through that, I get a lot of people that approach me with, hey, I want to franchise my company. And, you know, I'm not a consultant. So, you know, I typically just turn those things away. But what I realize is, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there. Specifically, there was one person I turned away that, you know, fast forward 5 years later and he just sold the company for a ton of money. And I looked at myself and I said, man, I turned that away. You know, there could have been an opportunity there. So instead of taking the approach of we're going to be a consultant and, you know, charge you all these, you know, fees to do all these services, you know, I'm looking for, you know, when these opportunities come to me, kind of ones that I could incubate, right? So, you know, come in, you could work in my offices. We're going to help you. We'll look at it. We'll help you create, you know, I have an in-house legal. I've got, you know, franchise attorneys that are, you know, close by that we work with as well. We'll help you, you know, you go to create a franchise disclosure document and you do it on your own, you're going to spend $30,000 to $50,000. You know, with me, it's going to be $5,000 because I understand how to do it and you're going to help create it and we're going to have the templates with you and you're going to actually go through the process of understanding and reading it, and then you're going to work with the lawyers to set it up and, you know, get it up going, get it scrappy. I'll help you from a development standpoint. We'll see if we can start selling franchises and growing your business. And if, A, we work well together, if I think, you know, because the success or failure of any business is the person running it, right, period. So if now we establish that you're, you know, a sharp entrepreneur, I'm not going to charge you a bunch of fees to be your consultant. I want to partner with you and buy into your company and provide seed capital and help you grow it and be there from, you know, from the beginning and kind of, you know, date a little bit before we get married. So that's kind of where the Franchise Whales came up from, is just kind of taking advantage of opportunities that exist between everything that I'm already doing.
Paul Segreto, you and David seem to have something to talk about.
Yeah, it sounds like. I mean, my wheels have been spinning throughout this entire conversation, obviously, as I get entrenched day after day after day with emerging brands and obviously have a lot of the creative juices myself flowing. So, David, yeah, we'll probably have a conversation coming out of this for sure, and I look forward to that. So what is it that you would advise an emerging brand or better yet, somebody that says to you, you know, I've got this business and I want to franchise it. What should I do? What would your initial advice be to them?
So my first thing is most people say, I want to franchise my company. Now, what they're really saying is I'm undercapitalized, I want to grow, and I don't know how. So franchising is what is kind of everyone's plan A because it's just kind of expected. So the first thing is, do you really want to franchise it? What's the reason why? Because if the issue is you need capital to grow, right? Like I'm involved in a concept right now that they came to me because they wanted a franchise, and then we're not franchising it. It's not a franchise. when you look at it, there's zero reason to franchise it other than money. So when you have the solution for raising the capital, you know, the first question is identify if your business should be a franchise or not, right? And make that decision because franchising makes the most sense to grow your business, like Dental Fix. It makes the most sense to grow our business, right? So that's step one. Step two, okay, yes, I want to franchise my company. To me, you want to have people that align their interest with you helping you. So aligned financial interest to me is one of the most important things you could do in business, period. So the way that I have it structured is my entire senior management team, I have a parent company called That Whale, and That Whale is the parent company that owns all of this. And if you're in my senior management team, you own a piece of That Whale, which means you own a piece of everything, right? So I have financial incentive built in for my senior management team to, number one, not leave, number two, to help all of these kind of emerging companies, right, and these sister companies. And, you know, but align that financial incentive. So find people. Paying somebody $200,000 to help you structure your franchise agreement is not aligning financial interest. It is I'm paying you, and you're going to do a bunch of work for me. You want to spend as little as you possibly can to do that work so that you have as much profit left over. That's not aligned financial interest. So make sure that whoever it is that you find to help you or partner with, that you develop a win-win relationship with them that is that they are financially incentivized. You know, it's kind of like an attorney. If I pay an attorney by the hour, don't wonder why my bill is more hours than I thought it was going to be. You know, I'm paying you by the hour. The more money you bill me, the more it's going to be. If I figure out a way to pay you a flat fee to do my services, you know, to me that makes more sense, right? I could budget it and it kind of aligns financial interests. So make sure you align those financial interests, and it's all about the people. It is all about the people that you partner with and you get to help you. So if you get the right people, you're going to be successful.
Tremendous stuff. Tremendous stuff, David. I mean, I'm sitting here. I know Stan is probably saying the same thing. I think between, you know, Stan and I, we've got 60 plus, well over 60 plus years in franchising, and wondering why, how come we have never met?
I don't do the shows. I don't do Facebook. I don't do Twitter. I don't.
Yeah,
do
I found that
stuff.
Out. I went to look for you on LinkedIn and found all of your 12 connections. So
yeah, so I don't do any of that stuff. You know, for me, I like to be the guy behind the scenes. Like, if you look at my largest company, it's a company called Chilongo. You know, the name of the company is my partner, Dr. Chilongo. You know, I want to be the guy that nobody knows, that doesn't exist, that I'm in the background, and I'm not looking for spotlight. You know, I'm wearing T-shirt and shorts, and you know, I want to be able to think and work with people that I want to work, but I don't want to be the guy sitting in a stuffy meeting with the shirt and the tie and having to, you know, execute all these things and KPIs, and that's just not me. So that would probably be the reason that I don't meet. I don't go to the franchise shows. I have. I mean, I think it's a great way to network and meet people, but, you know, that's not where my strength is. My strength is in doing what I do, so I just kind of stay in my lane.
Well, it looks to me like you're doing it pretty darn well.
Yeah, very well. And to that end, I definitely want to reach out to Jane Levy and all the folks at the great PR firm Fishman Public Relations for, you know, introducing us to you and bringing you on the show today. And, of course, we always want to thank all the PR firms that provide guests to Franchise Today, whether it be All Points PR, BizCom, Sanderson & Associates, Nick Powell's, you know, all the firms, including Fishman PR. Thank you very much. But in this case, definitely, Jane, thanks for bringing us David Lopez today. And David, I really appreciate you being a guest today. It is amazing how an hour blows by on Franchise Today, isn't it?
It is. It is. I can't believe it's an hour.
Yeah, well, you know, 7.5 years, we've got, you know, over 300 episodes in the bank. It's a labor of love, and we're great to have you on. And today's episode, like all episodes of Franchise Today, is available on iTunes on the Franchise Today. And again, thanks for being on the show, and I hope to meet you at some time in the future, but certainly we'll be talking before then. Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it, and thank you thank you, Fishman PR, for setting this up as well. And for everyone who's listening, you know, if you guys have any questions and want to reach out to me, please, you know, the easiest way would be you could just email me directly at david@dentalfixrx.com, and I'm good at responding to emails.
Great. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, David. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, Stan, we another great show in the books. Very intriguing guest, very entrepreneurial, and still shaking my head and saying, you know, why has he been below our radar? But obviously, he laid it out there. It sounds like he's got he definitely got it. He's got it all in order. I don't even know.
Yeah, he's scaling. He's scaling his own organization, much less the franchised brands or businesses that are being operated under all of his holding companies. He's got his eye on the right ball, Paul. Nothing happens without people. And we always say that franchising is high tech, high touch. Taking care of your own people is the precursor to being able to take care of those franchisees that your people have to touch every day. And when you've got an organization with a model like he's just described, everybody's interests are in alignment to be sure that everyone's doing the right thing, just like that Father's Day message that he put up on Facebook. It all starts and ends with people, and then processes come behind that, and this guy's got it right.
You know, to that end, Stan, and I know we're you've already committed to bringing Aziz onto the show, and we have some others that we have in the pipeline, John Evans, the young entrepreneur from Canada, very active and done well in the Next Gen program. Gary Occhiogrosso, the show host that had us both on at different times on his radio show, and some others. But one of the things I would like to do, and probably do it as we lead into the end of the summer, into the fan event, is get on some of these franchisees, maybe even one of the ones that were on the panel that you were on yesterday, that have, you know, these multiple brands and multiple units, because it is all about building that organization. Boy, and I would love to learn some of their insight as to how they treat people and how important they are to their organization. I think that would be great. And, of course, you know, Aziz would probably lend to that as well, because I know he walks the walk and talks the talk in that area as well.
I couldn't agree with you more, but I think you've touched on an interesting point, though, Paul, doing it from the point of view of a franchisee, where the rubber really meets the road out to the consumers who touch the brands every day, would bring another level of perspective to our audience that we usually are focused more on the Zor side. So that would be an interesting approach. I think that's a good idea. Let's do it.
Yeah, that would be great. So that's something we definitely have to concentrate on, you know, between now and September. I think that would really be good. Well, anyway, Stan, another great show. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretta, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.